Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinny Eastwood Show. The show that sounds like it's commentated by somebody who's narrating a horse race. my very special guest joining me live now at 4 o'clock in the effing morning is Rick Simpson. Rick, welcome back to the program. It's been some time.
Yeah, it's been a while, Vinny, but I'm always happy to be with you in the land down under. I guess, well, you're next to the land down under.
Yeah, we're the land down under and to the side.
And to the side. you know, I just watched a documentary recently out of New Zealand called Drug Lord.
And, my good friend Alric Rice made that, and I supplied a lot of the footage, and yeah.
Yeah, he did a really good job. The only problem I found with it, there was some talk in there about, regulating and all of this, but, that's the only problem I found with it. And, of course, you know that I'm against any regulations of any kind.
Well, you know, seeing as we're talking about the only things that we could find that were wrong with Drug Lord, because it's kind of like a 99.9% slam dunk, you know, kaboom! And it's only...
Oh, yes.
And especially for those who are completely unaware of the topic whatsoever. So if anybody would like to go to the website Drug Lord, LAWED, you can download the DVD for as little as $4.20. In fact, it might even be less. Arik is holding a number of triumphs there. And just download the documentary and watch it. Go to the IMDb page and give it 10 stars, because there were a whole lot of people we found, Rick, that were going to IMDb who were anti-cannabis and just giving it the lowest rating possible. So we're going to try and do the opposite things there. But in terms of the only thing that I found that was wrong with it, I could completely justify not including it, was the fact that the CIA is involved in running drugs, you know?
in the biggest way. Biggest drug dealers on the planet are some of these governments, you know, United States. And it's just amazing, you know, what they get away with. I had a laugh. You know, I seen a little documentary here one day about the Coast Guard in the United States and how they were guarding the waters between South America and North America, you know, to stop drug smuggling. You know, it's too bad that the Coast Guard hadn't looked up, because they probably could have seen those big cargo planes, you know, loads of cocaine that the CIA were smuggling. when we have our own soldiers up there in Afghanistan, you know, guarding poppy fields where most of the heroin supply on this planet comes from, that kind of tells you something's wrong with this picture. But it's just like people never seem to want to wake up and, you know, and look at the reality of the situation we're in.
Reality is a very scary thing, and as I like to say comedically, people like to escape reality regularly, and preferably with weed. And the reason for that is because it's a scary and it's a nasty thing, and it's difficult to cope with. And you, sometimes, and in fact, I exclaimed out this morning, Rick. I got really upset. I go, God damn it! I hate being intelligent, because
it hurts, doesn't it?
You know, because you can see and you can figure stuff out, and because you know what's going on, that's what's so much of a painful and frustrating burden. And the worst part about it is you can't dumb yourself down so that you can't lessen the burden. You only keep getting more intelligent as the days go on, and your life keeps getting consistently worse because you know how bad stuff is getting.
Well, that's about the way I feel, Vinny. That's what it was when I was back in Canada in 2013 for a few months. I was really uncomfortable in my own country, for God's sakes. And it just, like, everywhere I looked, that's all I seen was corruption, you know. And the people, like, everywhere I went, like the people I was talking to in all these small towns, you know, in the area I come from, I would talk to them, and they would all say the same thing. You know, we know this works. We know, you know, these extracts from the cannabis plant have wonderful healing abilities. Well, it's, you know, why don't you stand up for it? You know, why don't you surround your politician's office? Do something constructive. But they just stand there and look at you. You know, it's really pathetic. You know, like people like my father that fought in the Second World War, if we had a few of them around today, I think things would be a whole lot different. But there's just today, it just seems like people have no backbone. You know, they're afraid of the government, and that's totally wrong, because it's like I said, you know, the people in any country, they're the power. It's not the damn government, you know, and it's just about time the governments realize this. But, you know, today it just seems like so many of these governments, they have the public on the run. And, you know, this is truly ridiculous because their job is to work for the public, you know, not dictate to them.
Well, being a servant and being a ruler are two very different things and different roles. And what's problematic is that I think it's the old saying that you can't serve two masters, right? So government gets elected by the people, allegedly, right? And the problem is the people that are pulling their purse strings and financing their quote-unquote successful propaganda campaigns in which to convince people that they're not trying to shaft them by working for multinational interests. All right, okay, well, honestly, we can't serve you, the people, because, honestly, we have a different master, you know? So the problem is inherently that you have to realize almost everything that you are told is closer to the opposite of what you're being told, right? So government's there to help you. No, they're there to enslave you. Media's there to inform you. No, they're there to misinform you. And suddenly things make a bit more sense when you look at it in this sort of inverted manner. What's problematic about that is you become very cynical, and what's worse about that is your predictions become very accurate, which makes you even more cynical and jaded.
Well, I just look at it now. I mean, I've been in so many different countries over the last few years, and you see, you know, it seems everywhere you go, these absurd laws are in place. But, I mean, these countries, they all just followed the model of the United States is all they did. I mean, they didn't do any research into cannabis to determine if there was any real danger, because if they had, they wouldn't have found any. You know, this is the most useful, most medicinal and useful plant on this planet. But when when you look back at what the American government did in 1975, when they hid the Medical School of Virginia study, and confiscated all that other research, you know, from the universities in the U.S. You know, it was just ridiculous. So, I mean, when this Medical School of Virginia study proved they wanted to prove that cannabis caused cancer, and when it proved just the opposite, that, you know, cannabinoids like THC were killing cancer, well, the American government shut it right down. So for the last, over 40 years now, they've been hiding the truth from their own people and the rest of the world. And it just sickens me when I see this, and it's all historical facts. I mean, these are proven facts that we know. You know, when you look at Richard Nixon, oh my God, what a piece of work he was. You know, quoting, I'm going to, you know, he wanted to get the lowdown on cannabis, so he formed the Schaefer Commission. And then the Schaefer Commission comes back and tells him that they feel that cannabis should be made completely legal, you know, once more. And they didn't even feel that it was a narcotic. And then Nixon, he turns right around and, you know, he takes the report that he ordered himself and throws it in the trash can. And then a couple of years later, he starts the war on drugs. And what drug did he focus on? Cannabis, the very plant that he was told to legalize. You know, I mean, this whole thing is so absurd, you know, but people, it's just like people, they forget their history, or they don't even bother to do any research into this, because if they did, it's as plain as the nose in your face that there is a gigantic, you know, conspiracy against us all in all respects. I mean, the mega rich are controlling this world. They're controlling our governments. They control the mainstream media, you know, and the governments in turn control the legal systems and medical systems in their country. It's like, we've got all of these people working against us. But it's those guys that stand in the shadows, you know, the mega rich, you know, Rothschilds, Rockefellers, Warburgs, that type. They're the ones that are really running the show. And, people have to realize that, you know, the damage that, you know, these mega rich individuals are doing to this planet, because they're using up all our natural resources. They're killing the planet. And it's so damn obvious. You know, you look at the events, you know, the Gulf oil spill, Fukushima. It's just one horror story after another. Not to mention all their, you know, poison industries that they run worldwide. You know, they do provide some jobs, but, you know, those industries could all be converted over into hemp-based, you know, industries that are environmentally friendly. You know, and we could detoxify the earth, and, you know, at the same time, we could save ourselves. But if we don't stand, it's up to the public now to do this, because these governments are not reacting. They're not doing what they should. And I, you know, and I see this basically everywhere I go.
Now, we still have this this entrenched mentality, and it's particularly among the baby boomers who went through the massive propaganda era of prohibition, who are literally looking at cannabis users as though they are less than human, right? And this is the real disconnect here for me, is because I'm a human being and I have suffered and been traumatized and living with the consequences of being busted for cannabis. But the problem is, I wouldn't actually have experienced really any negative consequences, and certainly none anywhere near as horrific, had I not been busted for cannabis and only just smoked it. Mm-hmm. And so it's the law that is oppressive, and because people have this oppression mentality, because they have this vitriol, this hate for cannabis users, there is an endless pool of human suffering that keeps growing and growing and growing and expanding outwards. So it occurs to me that we have a massive arrest rate for youth for cannabis. I think if you I remember this. I was writing an essay in university this one time about cannabis, and one of the parts I needed to ask was from a police officer, who do they look for when they're looking for cannabis users? And without batting an eye, he said groups of males under 25. Now, if that's not trying, like specifically making an effort to create another generation of young men with criminal marks on their records who are going to find it harder to find work in a increasingly misunderstood criminal justice system and a society to boot that they're going to go back into, I don't know what is. Now, does destroying a generation sound justifiable to people? No? Okay, well, yes, time to legalize weed then, bro, because that's what you're doing. Incidentally, they're like, oh, well, no, so many people will start smoking cannabis if you legalize it. Everybody will be high. The only thing in the entire country that will even make a profit anymore will be Domino's Pizza, and that's only because they deliver, you know. And I'm like, bro, actually, in every single case that they have legalized pot, sure, usage goes up for a very short period of time, and then it goes down and down and down and down. In the Netherlands, there were like, I don't know, 1 in 7 people smoking, you know, about 10-20% of the population. And then they legalized it, and now only 1 in 21 people smoke it. Okay?
Yeah.
Right? So that's, you're literally cutting by 2/3 the amount of people who regularly use cannabis by legalizing it, pretty much, right? Same thing has been found in Portugal. Similar studies are going to be coming out soon with the United States and the states that are legalizing it. So here's the question to prohibitionists. If you don't like people smoking cannabis, why are you supporting it being illegal if it means that 2 to 3 times as many people will smoke it if it's illegal? You stupid cunt.
Well, it is truly ridiculous that people stand against it, especially the medicinal use. I mean, there's no harm to this plant in any respect. But when you look at the medicines, you know, that can be made from this plant, you know, we still need to perfect them to a higher level. But, but these extracts have miraculous healing abilities. But yet, you know, the brain dead public, you know, they've been, you know, well, I shouldn't say brain dead, but I mean, they're brainwashed really more than anything else, you know, but they still, you know, they've had all of this nonsense pumped into them, you know, trust your doctor, trust your politicians and all of this foolishness. And look where it's got us. I mean, you know, like people rush out and they take these absurd treatments, the chemotherapy and the radiation, you know, when they're cancer causing treatments. And this is what they're using to treat cancer. You know, everything I see about the medical system, you know, like the, well, especially cancer treatment, but when you look at, you know, all of these pill pushers, you know, sticking all these chemicals into us, you know, it's all just profit. That's all it's based on. You know, the drug companies today, they don't want to supply you with anything that actually works and heals you, because then there's no return business, you know. So they've got a first class racket going on here. And, you know, between what the governments are doing and the pharmaceutical industry, this is something we would expect from the mafia, you know, not people where you're supposed to put our trust in. So, it's truly bewildering to me why the public, you know, just can't wake up and see things for what they really are. You know, this, you know, our world is falling, really is going to hell in a handbasket, and nobody's doing a damn thing to stop it. You know, and if we don't wise up soon, I think we'll pass the point of no return. And, you know, and I believe in a very short time from now, most of us could wind up being extinct. Mm. And that's where the, you know, this road to destruction is leading us.
Yeah. And I find this is actually a question that people like us often ask ourselves. How can people be this stupid? How can they still believe these lies and everything like that? And you know what's interesting? We already know the answer. We know that the media is corrupted. We know that education doesn't teach you fuck all. We know that access to information is now bigger than ever, but so are the efforts to prevent you from finding it. And so are the efforts to prevent you from believing it. You know, and so are the efforts to prevent you from supporting it. It's game theory, right? Think about a million inputs and outputs, and it's actually too much for one person to see the overall picture. So the thing I like about you, Rick, particularly as a cannabis activist, is because not only you know, but you acknowledge and make reference to the broader conspiratorial base. What frustrates me when... Because basically nobody can understand it all, and everybody's got a particular interest, a speciality, right? Like, that's what I try to do. I've got an interest in pretty much everything, but I specialize in broadcasting and being a douchebag with a microphone, you know? Cause everybody's got a talent. And what I'm thinking here is other cannabis activists and people in all sorts of different movements, be it fluoride, chemtrails, and everything like that, they do tend to avoid any wider topics because it obviously, if you're going for one target, right, you've got to have your spear very narrow at the tip in order to pierce that veil, maybe, because otherwise, and I think their fear could be partially justified, if they bring up any other references and things of that nature, the media will jump on them and attack that and go in all these different directions. However, what I've found in practice is that no matter how accurate you are, no matter how focused you are, they do that anyway. And if you're too good to demonize, they omit you completely.
That's about the size of it. You know, I mean... back when I went through the legal system in Canada, I mean, I had all the evidence that one could possibly want. I mean, when you have, you know, cancer patients that were terminal, ready to testify, and now they're cancer-free, I mean, what does that tell you about the whole system? You know, they won't allow, the, you know, people like that on the stand, you know, because you're not allowed to have a medical defense. Well, you know, this is man's oldest known and safest medication, for God's sakes. It's been in use for over, like, 5,000 years, and we're not allowed to use... you know, our possession of cannabis as a defense, or, you know, as a medical use as a defense. This is beyond comprehension, you know, but this is exactly what's going on. So governments everywhere are just dictating to their people, you know, the rules that the rich want to see in place. And, I mean, this is a true horror story. But I know recently I was just in, I just returned from 5 months in India. I was really shocked with India. I thought that when I went there, you know, the homeland, or, you know, at least like the surrounding region, that's the homeland of cannabis, you know. And I went there, and I hate to say it, but I mean, I couldn't find anything that I would consider even a good strain. You know, everything was seeded; it wasn't grown properly. I was just shocked, you know, that they have all of this history. You know, allopathic practitioners there have been using cannabis, well, since 1400 BC. You know, it's cannabis has been part of allopathic medicine, or excuse me, Ayurvedic medicine, not allopathic. But, you know, and actually it's still in use today. But in India, they put the laws in place in 1985. So, you know, the growing and use of cannabis is outlawed, but they still do allow it for the Ayurvedic practitioners. But I made quite a bit of, well, I did an event there at an Ayurvedic college and spoke to about 120, you know, these Ayurvedic practitioners. And they were just shocked when I come up with this. You know, and I told them, I said, you know, once we have these extracts, you know, in mainstream medicinal use, it's going to change the face of medicine forever. And it's going to put the old Ayurvedic medicine right back on top where it belongs. You know, it's time for us to get rid of this chemicals and poisons. This is not healing anyone, for God's sakes.
Yeah. I mean, we're putting pathological medicine, as I like to call it, rather than allopathical. putting that on the bottom heap of the rung, I think, kind of needs to be done. There's two things, I think, are the primary changes that need to be done in medical schools, which are incidentally financed by Colgate and other big pharmaceutical companies and everything like that. Other than getting rid of that corrupting financing elements, two things need to be introduced into a general MD degree, all right? Nutrition and the use of cannabis for medicine, all right? And all the things thereof. If they've got that entire thing in their tool chest, I think they could probably really do a lot of good.
Well, I believe you're right. I mean, it's too bad, you know, that our medical doctors, I mean, who swear the Hippocratic Oath, it's too bad that they wouldn't start following it, you know, because if they did, they would be supplying medications, you know, harmless, non-addictive medications like the extracts that can be produced from the cannabis plant. This is the road they should be on, and that would follow the Hippocratic Oath. So it really disturbs me when I see all of these physicians behaving this way. And believe me, I had a real hate on for the oncologists and people like that, because, I mean, the oncologists, they're the ones that work directly with the cancer patients, and they see the damage, you know, that these treatments they're providing are doing, for God's sakes. But, you know, I've come to, actually, there's quite a few oncologists now starting to come out, you know, and speak out quite loudly, you know, about getting this prohibition against cannabis lifted. And I'm grateful for that. But
well, thank goodness they've decided to be hypocritical instead of hypocritical.
Yeah, that's true. But, I was starting to lose hope in the whole damn medical system. But it is coming around slowly. And like I said, this will be the new face of medicine. But my God, how long is it going to take for us to have it? I mean, you know, I started doing all this back in 2003. And, for years and years, I beat this drum. And, you know, I think it was 2007, Harvard University started agreeing with me. And then 2011, the American Cancer Institute started to sing a new song, you know, about cannabis. Actually, I just read a report recently that was put out by the American Cancer Institute. And, you know, and they're admitting everything I've been saying. You know, THC killing cancer cells, the whole shoot and match. You know, they've proved it scientifically, but nobody's listening. You know, so that people, the public, just continue going, taking their chemo and radiation, and then going to a graveyard and digging a hole for them to climb in, because that's the future when you take, you know, treatments like that. It's just horrific what they've got away with. But again, you can't, in many instances, I mean, you can't blame the doctors, because the government's put these regulations in place, and doctors are, you know, forced to follow them. And if they step outside the guidelines and prescribe something like cannabis, well, there's a good chance that they'll have their license pulled. You know, what a stupid world.
Well, that's,
it just doesn't make sense.
That's very true, and I think that's one of the mentions in the film Drug Lord. In the New Zealand, I think it's the Misuse of Drugs Act 1978, I don't remember the exact year, but it has provisions within the Act for doctors to prescribe medical cannabis, because at the time that it was being debated in the House, a lot of people, chemists and things of that nature, who had shelves full of cannabis, created a lot of fuss and put submissions into the government. However, since the passing of the law, dating up till today, zero prescriptions have been filed with the Ministry of Health. Zero. Because doctors know, they know, that if they prescribe cannabis to anyone, A1, they're afraid that their practice will be overrun by people who want it. You know, I don't want my practice full of stoners, you know, just wanting weed. And the and the other element is that, what is the medical board's going to do to them? Is their practice going to fall under attack? Are they going to face closure? Are they going to have their license revoked? That kind of thing. Because let's face facts here. If you've spent 7 to 10 years, then another 10 years on top of that, getting your qualification and then bringing your practice into a point where it's actually operating at a point of profitability, are you going to risk that? Right? Some people do. Because it's the right thing to do, and they lose everything. That's how powerful the medical lobby is at this point. They rule with an iron fist.
Well, I think what I've been doing over these last years, it's like I said, it's been a long, hard road, but I take great pleasure in knowing that I've cost the pharmaceutical industry a great deal of money, and I'm costing them more every day. You know, my aim is to put these people out of business because, you know, they've been doing nothing but wrong to us for decades. You know, they've disguised, like I said, chemicals and poisons as medicine, and that's what they shove into us. I mean, it's totally ridiculous. You know, it boggles the mind that something like this, you know, could have even taken place. You know, when you look at the history involved with cannabis, my God, look at the UN. I think it was 1954 that Harry Anslinger went to the United Nations and had the United Nations declare cannabis to be a non-medicinal plant, even though its use in medicine is documented for thousands and thousands of years. So here's the United Nations, you know, it's a non-medicinal plant. And then they had their single convention treaty put in place in 1961, you know, and this denied the, you know, member nations from access to cannabis. It just boggles the mind. So the United Nations itself is also controlled by the same people, the big money. I believe it was the Rockefellers, wasn't it, that donated the land for the new United Nations building in the U.S.?
Yes, it was it was John D. Rockefeller donated the land for the U.N. building to be built on, and their first U.N. Secretary General was a former Nazi Party member, and that started up in 1945. Thank you! was it 1946, I think, the U.N. was established. Might have even been later, but yeah.
I'm not sure of the year myself, Vinny, but these big money types, like I said, they stand in the shadows, and they're really controlling everything. And, you know, this is not freedom. I mean, the only way we're ever going to see freedom is we have to set the cannabis plant free.
I have a point of contention.
And when we do that, then we set ourselves free.
I have a point of contention here, because we often say the phrase, they control everything, but the reality is sometimes we're giving them too much credit. They control a lot of very important things, absolutely sure, but our actions on a day-to-day basis, if you're cognizant of the fact that there are these controlling people out there, you can live your life upon the proviso that almost every single one of your actions has to be anti-control, has to be anti-enslavement, has to rail against it, has to make sure that these people are not going to get away with it, right? And I was talking with one of my writers for the show today, and he says, like, oh, if anyone can run for politics, and I can't because I've got cannabis convictions. I could run for mayor or something like that, and it'd be a funny sideshow. But I was just thinking, we can't actually kind of get into the structure to make a difference. The structure is often better destroyed from the outside, you know? I mean, it's like the old saying that you don't throw bricks when you're standing in a glass house, you know? It's like you're going into the establishment so that you can be anti-establishment. That sounds a little bit retarded, bro. I don't think it's going to work.
Oh, no, it's good. No, I mean, it takes a grassroots movement. It's the people themselves that have to make these changes. These governments, at the rate they're going, they'll never make them. And if they, you know, even if they do open doors for medicinal use for cannabis, it's going to be their buddies in the pharmaceutical industries that they're going to want to control it. You know, but there's no controlling this now. I mean, I did a show one night in England, and a guy, the announcer, I think he described it the best. He said, you know, he said, what you've done, Rick, he said, you've lit 10,000 fires all over this planet. And he said, you know, those fires are soon going to consume all the corruption that stands in the path of cannabis. And I know he's right, because there's more and more people now, you know, producing their own extracts. And you know, here in Europe, it's actually created a big shortage of cannabis, because there's so many people buying up pounds, you know, to make cancer treatments and things of that nature now. So it's, you know, it's made it almost impossible. And quite often you can't even find cannabis. So, you know, it's really catching fire in all of these countries.
No pun intended.
Yeah, no pun intended. But you know, I mean, you know, just people have to realize that this plant belongs to us all. It doesn't belong to a damn drug company or a government. And they have no right to control its use. They never did. You know, all of these laws are based in corruption. I mean, we all know this. So why are we following it? You know, when you look at, you know, all of these people being put in jail, And then these organizations like Normal running around saying they're trying to legalize it. You know, I mean, here you've got, Normal has a great number of lawyers at their disposal. And, you know, and they've been beating this drum now for over 40 years, but yet they can't even get rid of these laws that in reality do not even exist because they're based in corruption. You know, talk about the Twilight Zone, brother. We're living in
it. It's kind of like on the inside of every movement, I found that there are people of integrity who are usually quite individualistic and have gone through a lot, who don't compromise, who go after the truth for the truth's sake, and they're usually quite powerful. But then, there are organizations, some of which are good, and some of which are more or less just sort of dragging their feet on a lot of things and actually try to put barriers in the way of the individuals who are trying to do stuff outside of the system. Now, it seems to me that there's no comeback, right? Let me explain what I mean by that. Let's say I make a documentary and it's exposing the Rockefeller family or something like that. As soon as I release that documentary, do the Rockefellers get arrested the next day? No. So now, here's the thing. Would I still make the documentary knowing that the Rockefellers would not get arrested as a direct result? Yes, I would. Why? Because there's the ripple effect. Okay, if you put your intention into something and then you brought action behind it, it sends a ripple out to everybody who sees it, everybody who hears it, everybody who feels it. And some of those people, when they feel that intention, when they see that action, they will have a reaction and it will get through to them. Now, that's the whole thing, because it's not a measurable response. You can't go out and say, okay, I've made the documentary Run from the Cure about curing cannabis oil curing cancer, right? Now, that's caused a ripple effect that has more or less gone around the world. And now so many people are aware of the cannabis oil that cures them and have indeed been making their own oil on the sly and curing their friends and family, even though you never heard about it, Rick. Okay? See, that's the ripple effect. That's why we do what we do. Not because it comes back to us, but because it goes out and it becomes of use to somebody else.
Well, I agree, brother. I mean, when I started this whole thing back in 2003, and then about a year later, we put all the information, you know, up on the internet, told people how to produce their own, you know, medicines and the dosage instructions and everything. And, you know, it was a slow sell in the beginning. But, you know, as time went on, more and more people, you know, they started, you know, producing their own extracts. And then when Christian Lorette brought out Run from the Cure in early 2008, well, I mean, that documentary now has been viewed by hundreds and hundreds of millions of people all over the world. And, you know, I mean, the documentary was shot on a shoestring. I mean, I had no money. But somehow or another, we got the documentary put together, and it's had a wonderful impact. But there's just so many organizations, you know, that really, you know, the whole system, it's rotten right from the top to the bottom. Literally, what we have to do, we have to tear the whole system down and rebuild it properly. And if we unite in with one voice, just tell our governments that we've had enough of this nonsense. You know, and we could bring about these changes, I think, in a very peaceful way. But if these governments are going to continue to react the way they are, this could end up in a very ugly state. You know, I don't want to see anarchy and I don't want to see bloodshed over this cause. But in the end, I'm not sure right now, you know, which way it's going to go, because, you know, the people that are representing us are truly acting totally irrational about this. You know, I understand that politicians were brainwashed the same as we were. There's no question about that. But damn it, you know, when you represent the public, you know, your decisions better be based on reality, not on some made-up bunch of propaganda. You know, and it's their duty, you know, as our representatives to look into these things and get to the bottom, get to the truth. You know, and for years I've been offering, you know, any government, open the door for me, let me go in there. In no time at all. You know, I mean, they've been kicking this around for decades now. you know, about the medicinal use, but yet the government has all of these restrictions in place to stop you from doing the research. You know, so just turn someone like me loose and let me prove it. You know, I challenge any government to let me do this. I mean, it's not hard to prove, for God's sakes. I mean, anybody that produces these extracts can prove it to themselves. I mean, if you just make the oil from, say, 30 grams of good bud, you know, that'll give you around 4 to 5 grams of, you know, of high-grade oil. All you have to do is find someone with a skin cancer, a diabetic ulcer, a third-degree burn, you know, anything like that. Just put the oil on, put a bandage on, change it every 3 days, watch what happens. You know, like, it's truly sad, you know, when you have people like me running around the planet, you know, and all of this, well, we're in the middle of a cancer epidemic, for God's sakes. And, you know, like, we know how to cure cancer so easily, or to treat it in a rational manner, but yet the medical system, they do everything backwards, it seems. You know, and people have to understand that it's not just cancer here we're talking about. You know, the endocannabinoid system in our bodies, that regulates everything. It balances our bodies. And these cannabinoids, they take the place of our natural cannabinoids because most people today, their immune systems are compromised. I mean, we live in a poisoned planet. You know, we're not designed for this. So our immune systems become compromised and, you know, we can't produce enough of our own natural cannabinoids. And that's when you get diseases like cancer and all of these other, you know, horrible diseases. And, you know, all you have to do is give your body the supplement, give your body the cannabinoids. And, you know, that takes the place of the natural cannabinoids and it heals us. You know, it's so simple, but yet medical schools, they don't even want to talk about the endocannabinoid system. And they certainly do not want to talk about cannabis as a medicine.
Yeah. I mean, you go into your doctor and you go, "Doctor, I've got some very, very bad diseases. Some of them are life threatening." And he goes, "Okay." Pops a couple of seeds in a little jar. There you go. Go home, chuck them in the dirt, water them, harvest the buds, get a little bit of isopropyl alcohol and suck the oil out of it, and then just put it on your rash, bro. Okay, it'll be gone. Don't worry, you'll be fine. You'll have to take care of yourself. Well, does this cost me anything? I don't know, like 12 cents for the seeds. Well, is that supplemented by the government? No, it's basically free, bro, because the stuff is basically free and you can take responsibility for almost any disease that you've got and X me out. So basically I can help people that really need help, you know, people with broken arms, right. People with mental illnesses and post-traumatic stress syndrome from doing too much police work, busting cannabis users, you know, the people who really need help. And it just seems to me like the reason why I believe the cannabis molecule is so beneficial in so many different health areas is it's transmutable. You're born with cannabinoid receptors in your cells, and the more cannabinoids that they get exposed to, the more cell receptors they grow. And the cell receptors send a signal to the cannabis molecules, telling it what it's craving, telling it what's wrong with the body, and then the molecule rearranges itself into a formation and then inserts itself into the cell and gives it what the cell was craving, hence giving it the ability to combat goodness knows how many diseases at the same time.
Right. Well, this is what I found with the cannabis. I mean, you know, this is what people have to understand. I mean, I'm horrified right now because there's so many people out there supplying these oils. And a lot of the time they're supplying oils made from sativa strains, you know, very energizing. And that's the exact opposite effect that you want. You know, sativa oils produced from sativas are okay for topical use. But when it comes to ingesting the oils, I mean, you need the indica strain because that, you know, that they're so sleepy and sedative. And that's what gives the patients, you know, the rest they need to heal properly. This is what the doctor tells you to do. You know, go home and get some rest. It helps with the healing process. Oh, my God. I just find it so strange that, you know, that so many well-educated people, you know, will reject, you know, the simple truth. And it's staring them right in the face. I mean, all you have to do is read a little bit about the history of this plant, and that tells you right there. I mean, it was used by the greatest healers in history. And I honestly believe that Jesus Christ himself used it, because one of the main ingredients of the holy anointing oil was a substance called cannablossom. And that at that time, that's what they called the female buds from the cannabis plant, cannablossom. So the holy anointing oil was full of cannablossom, so that meant that it was it had the same healing cannabinoids as the extracts that I produced.
They used the blossom to bless them.
Yeah. So I strongly suspect that, you know, that Jesus himself was using cannabis, you know, with great benefit to treat the masses. But somehow or another, that got misconstrued along the way. And then there's, you know, basically the religions want us to believe that it was the power of God. Well, you know, maybe God does have some healing powers. I don't know. But I do know for a fact that cannabis does. And it has amazing healing powers. And this is what I found when I was working with this, you know, because I was working with many, many different strains. And I had 40 strains of my own. And I started noticing, well, there were, seemed like all the heavy indicas were very effective in treating cancer, you know, for the most part. But, you know, in other conditions like diabetes, you know, like some strains are better at relieving pain or lowering ocular pressure for glaucoma patients, or lowering blood sugars for diabetics, or even getting to the point where they don't even need insulin anymore. You know, so you know, they all of these different strains, their medical qualities vary. But when I started what I used to do, you know, I was seeing this, you know, I knew certain strains were better for pain relief because I was working with these strains on a constant basis. So what I started doing, I just started mixing all of these different oils together. And then all of a sudden, you got what history calls cannabis a panacea. When you mix these oils together, well, panacea means cure-all. And when you mix these oils together, that's basically what you have. You know, you have a medicine that you can use in just about any situation.
It'll be a magical place, like Neverland, you know, with Peter Panacea.
Yes, Peter Panacea.
Yeah, but, yeah, and he's wearing green as well. It'll work. In fact, there's a great meme in that. I'll probably get somebody to like put up a picture of Peter Panacea in his tight tights with weed. Fantastic. And you were talking before about how you don't get how the educated people aren't kind of drilling into the facts. Well, in my opinion, education is merely just a veiled form of indoctrination, which is supposed to shut the brain off in certain ways to obey conventional wisdom, obey authority, to not think independently, to regurgitate, to not be creative, essentially. And the longer you're in the education system, the longer it'll take you to get over it. Kind of like how they say if you've been in a relationship for 2 weeks, it'll take you a week to get over it when it breaks up or something like that, about half as long. But, you know, horses for courses. But regardless, what we're talking about here is a cannabinoid deficiency. I think this is what Dr. Bob Malamede was talking to me about one time on the broadcast, is that if people can't adapt, they can't change, they can't learn, they can't you know, have fun, they can't be a kid again and things like that, they're probably cannabinoid deficient and they need to have a joint. All right, somebody's taking life too seriously. They're incredibly angry. They don't listen. They don't really care about anybody. They're blaming everybody else for their problems and things like that. Dude, smoke this. Okay. Do you realize the effect that you're having on everybody else, bro, when you're not smoking weed? And it's like, yeah, man, I'm sorry I put you guys through that.
Well, I've seen it back when I was in I left Canada in 2009, you know, well, I had to stay in Europe because the government was getting ready to take me to court again, you know, more trumped up charges. But it's just ridiculous to see, you know, the behavior of these people. I mean, how can you stand there as a medical doctor or a researcher the researchers, the experts, you know, some of the top experts in the world now are definitely agreeing that this plant should be made legal. But the horror story is, I mean, all of these researchers that have been working in cannabis for decades, they all knew about the Medical School of Virginia study, and they knew the results. But yet, you know, they took their research grants, they sat there, and they kept their mouths shut. And I know why they did that, because, you know, in the world we live in today, if you open your mouth, well, all of a sudden, you don't have a career anymore. You know, you're ostracized. They ruin your life. But, and I guess that's the reason it was left to someone like me to bring the truth to the public because, you know, I mean, they couldn't take my children away. They couldn't do anything with me because, you know, I mean, I was injured. I worked for the government for many years myself. you know, and I suffered a severe injury, and they wouldn't do a damn thing to help me, and they wouldn't allow me to use cannabis. So, you know, I just looked at this and thought, well, this is something the world has to know, you know, be, you know, because it, in reality, our children and our grandchildren, they have no future. You know, look at the world we're leaving for them. You know, so to me, it was the only, the right thing, just simply the right thing to do, to stand up and tell people how to heal themselves. So that's exactly what I did.
Mm. And you're following in the footsteps of the late Jack Hera. And I recall, I think maybe even a month or so before I got busted back in 2004, I refer to it as Fucksake 04 as an 04 Fucksake. It was a really bad year. I got given the Cannabis Bible by a member of the New Zealand Aotearoa Legalize Cannabis Party, written by Jack Hera, and watched a documentary mm-hmm. about him, about how hemp could save the world. And it is 100% true, because with 50,000 industrial products, plus a medical panacea, plus the recreational uses, let's not forget that, and so many other things, it is essentially the be-all and end-all of a sustainable industrial society without the drawbacks of all of the other conventional materials and medicines and things that we're using at the moment. But so it would replace a enormous section of the economy. Now, what I know about powerful people who have a lot of influence is that when their influence is threatened, they will use their power to protect it.
Yeah.
These people had forestry interests, paper interests, you know, cotton growing, and all other sorts of medicines that they were trying to push out on the public at the time, when, what was it, Harry J. Anslinger or Henry or whatever the... whatever.
Harry
the
Anslinger, yeah.
Yeah. I really don't like the guy, because
none of us should.
Basically, because he's a brutal racist psychopath. But when that happened, it was so clearly an agenda by the people who already controlled the majority of the resources to maintain control of those resources. So the cannabis movement has to realize that if they're going to ignore the conspiratorial elements behind the scumbaggery and all of the vested interests that are involved here, and that they will still try to be involved even once the public wants it legalized by making GMO marijuana instead and stuff like that, that they can control. Unless that element is taken into account with any cannabis action, I believe it might be futile.
Well, you're quite right. You know, it's... You know, it's just that there's so much evidence out there right now. I mean, you go on YouTube, I mean, there's hundreds and hundreds of people with all kinds of different medical problems, you know, that they solve these problems by using cannabis extracts. But yet our governments tell us that, you know, this should be ignored. I mean, these people, you know, they had medical records, you know, that proves that, they, you know, they were suffering from all these debilitating and often deadly diseases. You know, but yet governments ignore that. We need more, you know, we need researchers to prove this. Well, I mean, when you see hundreds of patients, you know, treated effectively with a natural medication like cannabis, you know, how dare our governments ignore this, you know, huge body of evidence that currently exists. And that body of evidence is getting bigger and bigger every day. You know, so it's just, to me, it's just unbelievable.
Every time
that they're, you know, that they're behaving this way.
Well, every time the politicians have done something bad, or are doing something bad, or are covering up and preventing something good from coming around, when the media come up and question them about it, they say, well, I'm waiting for the evidence. I'm waiting for the findings of the commission. I'm waiting for the inquiry to be over. I'm waiting for such and such. Until then, I can't say anything as an honest person with my own opinion that's looked at the evidence myself, because basically I've got corporate cronies cock to suck.
Well, I mean, the evidence is overwhelming. It's there. All the scientific research has been done, for God's sakes. You know, study after study have proved the same thing. You know, I mean, look at what they were doing with all these lab animals, you know, not, you know, implanting cancer cells, letting a tumor grow, and then they treat the tumor with cannabinoids, and it kills the cancer cells. You know, this has been going on for decades, but yet they won't, you know, of course, doctors aren't allowed to do this. But, I mean, when you look at a dying patient, you know, somebody dying from cancer, I mean, what do they have to lose? You know, they'll give them chemo and they'll give them radiation, which they know is going to kill them. But they can't, you know, there's no possible way that they can see their way clear, you know, to give them something that actually might heal them. This is, you know, I'm not saying that cannabis has a 100% batting average, you know, with cancer, but it does have a very high success rate. There's no damn question about that.
What was the success rate of chemo? Was it 4%, I believe?
If it was that, Vinny, I think, well, they use chemo in
hold on a second. There was a 5-year cure bylaw. Basically, if you can get somebody's cancer to go into remission and they survive 5 years after the treatment, then they're classified as cured. So if they die 5 years and 1 day after, that still counts as cured.
Yeah, yeah, they have quite a way of skewering, you know, the statistics. There's no question about that. It's, you know, like you say, people still, like, you know, they think we need more double-blind testing. You know, this is just nonsense that the pharmaceutical industry, you know, invented, you know, just to pull the smoke screen over people's eyes. But, I mean, if I had 100 cancer patients standing in front of me, I mean, I wouldn't even think about giving half of them a placebo. I mean, I'd give them the oil because I know it works. And, you know, and like I said, where it's so easy for anybody to prove it themselves, you know, like just by using topically. I mean, when you look at diabetic ulcers, I mean, the medical system don't heal diabetic ulcers. They wait for the gangrene to set in and then they cut your foot off and next they cut your leg off. You know, it's so ridiculous. But just put this oil on a diabetic ulcer. Watch what happens. Same thing with third degree burns. You know, this oil heals third degree burns in no time, you know, and leaves no scars, you know, but yet look what they do in burn units today. I mean, people go through months and months of agony and they're subject to infections and all these horrible operations. And in the end, they come out badly scarred anyway. You know,
they look like monsters, and it's kind of like a lot of real severe burn victims commit suicide because they can't recognize themselves in a mirror. They lose their identity, and the treatments that are being done for burns, because the burns are so painful, the doctors, I don't know, maybe they justify the kind of treatments that they do, but sometimes they actually try to peel layers of skin off to try and get the skin underneath. Now, they're literally skinning somebody alive slowly,
mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes.
Now, imagine that kind of pain, and the only reason why you're undergoing that pain is because the person's in a white lab coat and he's not giving you cannabis and he's telling you this is your only option for your son here.
Oh, yeah, that's quite right. I mean, I know from my own experience. I mean, I had a severe burn to the right hand. First time I made the oil, first time I made this extract back in 99.
Well, could we save the story about the burns and the cannabis until just after the break there? We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, after the break. You are listening to the VinnyEastwoodShow.com on American Freedom Radio 4 days a week. This is a listener-supported broadcast, so if you like the fact that we've got Rick on and everything, chuck us a few dollars into the donation account, into the kitty, so that we can continue to bring you fabulous guests on this fabulous network. Check out the sponsors on the homepage of the VinnyEastwoodShow.com as well. We'll be right back in just a few minutes, folks. Don't you go anywhere. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Just because we're being exterminated doesn't mean we can't make it fun. Otherwise, what's the point of being killed? And my very special guest is Rick Simpson from phoenixtears.ca. Now, you were talking about you had an experience where you got burned and you used the cannabis there and the pain of it all?
Yes. Well, I mean, back in 1999, I was still taking all the, you know, the drugs that the doctors were giving me. But I was getting desperate at that point because I was getting suicidal because of some of these, you know, the effects of these medications. So, you know, I decided that, you know, I would produce the oil. I went to my doctor and everything and talked to him about it. And he did, you know, and I said that, you know, I said, well, what would you think if I produced, you know, the essential oil from this plant and ingested it as opposed to smoking it? And he got a really strange look on his face, but he did admit, he said, that would be a much more medicinal way to use it. So I went home and I tried to produce the oil. And when I did, I was, you know, under the influence of these chemical drugs, I wasn't thinking too clearly, and I wound up setting myself on fire. And I gave my, well, my right hand was severely burned. I mean, 3/4 of my hand had melted and was hanging in gobs. And it was just amazing. I mean, I went to a doctor after about 4 days after the burn, and the doctor looked at it, and he was shocked. He said, "When did you do this?" And I said, "You know, 4 or 5 days ago." "Oh, my God, man, there's nothing I can do for you. I mean, you have third-degree burns. I want you to come back in 7 days, and then we're going to start doing skin grafts from your back and your ass." And, you know, so, you know, like I said, my thinking was horrible, you know, under the influence of these chemical drugs that the doctors were giving me. So when I went to produce the extract, and after I did that, you know, gave it that horrible burn, it wasn't, you know, immediate then, because I didn't apply oil. But what happened after I seen the doctor, I come home, and then I decided, well, I'm a stubborn character, so I'm going to make the oil. So I go down, and in no time, he had just wrapped my hand in gauze. That's all he did. He didn't put anything on it. And in no time, the gauze was soaked, you know, with the oil solvent mix. It had soaked right through it. And the strange thing was, you know, that I didn't even realize myself what was happening. But after 7 days, after about 4 days, I threw the bandage away because it looked awful. You know, it was dirty. So 7 days later, I go back to the doctor. And, I mean, when he looked at my hand, his eyes got as big as 2 saucers. You know, and he looked at me. He said, "My God," he said, "7 days ago, you had third-degree burns." He said, "Today, all that's there is pink skin." You know, it completely, not a scar. Even the hair follicles grew back. So when I think about children or anybody that suffered severe burns, you take a child that maybe had severe facial burns. You know, after what I seen, what this oil could do with my hand, well, couldn't it, if it can regrow my hand, it could probably regrow that child's face. You know, it's that simple. But, you know, and it's, when you look at the extract itself, I mean, it's a natural anesthetic and it's a natural antibiotic. And it actually, as soon as you put this oil on a burn, in just a matter of a minute or two, the burn's gone. That horrible, you know, running around with your, you know, shaking your hand for 3 hours because of the, you know, the burning sensation. That you don't suffer that. And you don't get all that water, you know, puffed up and water and everything, you know, seeping, you know, from the burn. It dries the burn out in no time and heals it. Well, in my case, completely, like from the time I burnt my hand, 11 days later, completely healed. No scars. So why aren't they using this in burn units?
Yeah, I remember Dr. Bob Melamed showed me a sequence of pictures of a man who had lesions on his skull, and some of them were like the size of softballs and golf balls and that kind of thing, these huge, pussy, growing masses of disgusting stuff, like growing right out of his head. And you see the oil get applied to the area, and slowly but surely they go away. And all that's left is this beautiful pink baby skin on the top of this guy's bald head.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you look at the history, it's been known for hundreds and hundreds of years that cannabis, you know, can heal severe wounds while leaving no scars. You know, the history of this plant goes back so far, and it was used in so many different ways, but the medicinal use, I mean, certainly, you know, it's proven now that the medicinal use, it really makes perfect sense, for God's sakes.
Hey, but, I just thought of another thing, you know, if it's scar reduction we want, maybe we should start talking to some plastic surgeons and seeing if they want to incorporate this into their surgery processes. Wouldn't there be a few dirty housewives of Beverly Hills who want a pair of double Ds with no scars? Huh?
Well, it takes scar tissue away, even on old scars. If you apply the oil and put a bandage on, keep doing it, and what'll happen, the scar will just fade away.
Really?
You know, and I've
because I got this burn on my I got this burn on my arm. I was smoking through my pipe and it got a little bit too hot, and then the pipe dropped and it dropped on my arm and then it rolled off the edge, right? And it created a Nike symbol on my arm, and I was like, "Oh, I think I'll keep that."
Well, you know, I've always told the public, you know, if women actually knew what these extracts, I mean, if you mix these extracts with a face cream or something like that and you apply it, the results are just amazing. If women knew what these extracts could do for their complexions, this stuff would be legal tomorrow morning.
Oh, I've got to jump in here, man, because we had this wonderful lady in New Zealand who's the Canna Nana, right? And she has fused just the root of the cannabis plant with coconut oil, and she's put them into, pressed them into shapes, into molds, and just popped them in the fridge so that they solidify, and then just uses them. And she's only been using them on one side of her face, and you can see that one side of her face looked very, very young, absolutely no age spots, no nothing, and the other one's kind of like a little bit pockmarked, and there's wrinkles and things like that. Like the difference is astounding.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I mean, I've had people say that, you know, that I found the fountain of youth. Well, I mean, it does make you feel, that was a very common comment. So many patients, you know, come back to me and told me, you know, they feel 20, 30 years younger, and they look much younger. You know, I mean, when you have pain or you're suffering from a horrible illness, you know, that can age you very rapidly. But when you recover, it was like the you know, if people could see the pictures, you know, of people that came to me and then see a picture of the same person 3 months later, and many times it's hard to believe it's the same person.
The effect is really quite mind-bogglingly extraordinary. Now, it means, of course, that it can be added into. So there's the cosmetic element, there's the health element, there's even the food element, like the seeds themselves. Even hemp seed itself is good for you, let alone the seeds from the cannabis plant. But obviously, you wouldn't want to be growing plants with a hell of a lot of seeds popping up in them, because you need that bud.
Well, that's the name of the game. I mean, if you let a female get pollinated, she's going to put all that energy into, you know, that she has into seed production. But if you keep the males away so the female can't get pollinated, well, then she just puts on more and more bud. So, I mean, and that's desirable, I mean, of course, when you're making the medicine. And this is, you know, because most of the time that I was growing, I did grow with a lot of seeds in some years, but most of the time it was usually from clones, you know, like when you put out, you know, a few hundred, you know, female plants, you know that they're all going to be female, you know, because you're taking cuttings. And that's a very efficient way, you know, of growing it. But a lot of the problem I find with cannabis is, too, there's so many people involved in this now trying to sell you grow products and everything. And, I mean, some of them do have, beneficial effects. I won't deny that. But I've always found that it seems like the more you complicate something, you know, the worse you make it. And right now, I mean, there's thousands and thousands of different strains. And, you know, these strains have been crossed back and forth in so many different directions. And really what we have now, we have strains of cannabis that even experts can have a hard time growing, you know, because they're so finicky. But, you know, the standard strains that like I used to have were so hardy. I mean, if you took 500 clones, they all rooted. You know, it was amazing, how hardy this plant really is. But, you know, they've kind of taken some of that away. A beginner just doesn't know, you know, like what to look for, what strains or anything like that. And honestly, the seed industry is in such a mess right now. You know, everybody and their dog is out there producing seeds. And, you know, they all say that, you know, like many of these big companies are selling what they say are the same varieties. You know, if you go to many companies and say, like, look at a strain like blueberry. Many companies sell the blueberry strain. But if you order those seeds from these companies and you grow these strains, you know, the different, because they are really different, they do differ in their medicinal values. And you find out you're growing five different types of cannabis. You know, we need stability, and we need, you know, so if people, you know, if you have cancer, you have arthritis or whatever, we need to set it up so that when they order seeds, they know what they're getting, and they know that these seeds will be effective for their illness. But right now, it's like a madhouse out there. There's so many people going in so many directions now, especially in the U.S., you know, it's just everybody's in this for the money right now.
Yeah.
And this should not be what it's about. I mean, what the public have to understand, it's these absurd laws and regulations that our governments have put in place that have caused this black market. I mean, if cannabis was grown the same as it was all through history as a farm crop, which is actually what it is, then you could buy a pound of good cannabis bud to produce your medicine for $10. You know, it's all a racket, right from the top to the bottom. I mean, the drug dealers, the governments are against me. The drug dealers are against me because, you know, they don't want to see this.
You're threatening their profit margins, bro.
Exactly. They don't want to see the profits dry up. You know, and but should the rest of us all suffer and die?
It comes down to this choice. You can either profit off cannabis and watch people suffer and die, or you can just make a little bit of a living out of it and watch people live and prosper.
Well, I mean, I always said, you know, I honestly think that the pharmaceutical industry has known how to cure cancer for about 150 years, and it's too bad that one of those big companies like E.I. Lilly or Parker Davis and them that were actually back in the 1800s, they were all producing cannabis-based medicines. It's just too bad that they hadn't gone out and grew the plant on a grand scale and produced the oils and made them available at a decent price. Because, I mean, if you turn somebody like me loose, I mean, I could, if I was doing this on a grand scale, I could produce a full, high-quality, full 60-gram treatment for $100. You know, I understand companies got to make a profit, but pharmaceutical companies are noted for making thousands or even tens of thousands of times more than, you know, than what these pills cost.
Technically, so they're the most profitable industry in the world right now, on the books anyway. The most profitable industry is obviously drug running, which the CIA does for them.
Yeah, they take care of all of that. But, you know, what the United States has done, and like I said, seeing all of these other countries following suit, you know, it's unbelievable. I had a meeting here, in 2012, I think it was, with the advisor to the Minister of Health right here in Croatia. And she was a doctor. And the minute I walked through the door, she looked at me and she said, "It's addictive." And I just laughed at her. I said, "Dear," I said, historically, it's a proven fact that cannabis is non-addictive. I said, even the Canadian government admitted that, I think it was in the year 2000, no addiction. And then she turned and she said, "Well, someone died from its effects." And she had a computer on her desk, and I pointed right at the computer. I said, "Show me." And she said, "Well, I think it was a synthetic cannabinoid that, you know, this patient died from." And I said, "Well, that doesn't surprise me. Synthetic cannabinoids are not the same, you know, as the real cannabinoids from the plant itself." And so she had no argument on that. So then I looked right at her and I said, "Tell me something." I said, "Did your government ever do a study to determine if cannabis presented any danger?" And she got this real stupid look on her face. And I said, "Your government didn't do a damn thing, did they? They just did, you know, what the other countries, you know, well, it was the big money causing it all, but they just followed what the other countries did. You know, it's all based on lies and deceptions, for God's sakes. And everything they've told us about this plant, it's all lies. I mean, I went looking for the devil in cannabis many years ago, and a good number of my friends have done extensive research into this too. We have never found anything about that plant that is detrimental. Everything they told us was nothing more than a pack of lies."
Well, everything that they told us that was bad about the plant has turned out to be a pack of lies. Everything that they said, "Well, it might actually be good for this," it turns out to be way better than they told you it was.
Well, I see the potential here for, I mean, many different medicinal plants. I mean, if, you know, if I can produce a simple extract like this and it has these kind of healing qualities, you know, what about all of these other medicinal plants that are available? So I don't say that cannabis is an elixir of immortality, but I can tell you one thing: if you're using cannabis on a steady basis, especially these extracts, then I think you're going to live a whole lot longer, and you're going to be a great deal more healthy all during your life. And you know what I see, I honestly think that, you know, if a person started taking the oil when they were very young, or these extracts when they're young, that I think it could actually double their life expectancy. You know, I mean, we could be living possibly 120, 140, maybe 150 years just by using cannabis, you know, and have a good quality of life. So, if you take cannabis and maybe some other medicinal plants, maybe you will find that elixir of immortality. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's something we could live with, that's for sure.
Personally, I like the idea of mortality because it means you have to devote your life to something that's greater and above yourself that will benefit people long after you're gone.
Well, the problem is today is, you know, like, I mean, you know, we spend the first 20, 30 years basically of our lives getting educated, you know, or getting good in a certain field. We work in that field for 20, maybe 20 years, 30 years, and then we're struck down with health problems, you know, and then whatever money we've accumulated, you know, for our golden years, then that all has to be spent, you know, because, you know, you have to pay the medical bills. So it's totally insane.
Well, I also thought about this would be very good for lower socioeconomic communities as well, you know, get a bit of ghetto homeopathy going on there.
Yeah, of course. You know, what I envisioned was, you know, like hemp-based, not just medicine, but hemp-based industries, you know, everywhere. You know, convert all of these horrible, you know, poisonous industries over into earth-friendly industries. And like you said, like, you know, we can, by growing this plant, we can put an end to starvation. You know, we can supply basically all of our energy needs. You know, the cannabis plant can produce a prolific amount of ethanol. As a matter of fact, in the last report I heard, you know, you can produce as much as 1,800 gallons of ethanol off one little acre of land. I mean, that's enough to run your car, heat your home, and have a few hundred gallons left over that you could sell if you wish.
I heard it's approximately four times the amount of ethanol you can get out of any other plant.
Oh, yes. And, you know, and it's just that, you know.
Right. So right now they're growing corn. They're growing corn that people can eat, and people are starving, right? And about a third of the U.S. food gets thrown away. And they're putting it into biofuel when they could be growing hemp and putting it into biofuel in one quarter of the space and giving the rest of the corn away for free to charity to people who are starving to death. Hmm?
Well, they go on about, you know, the big worry of, you know, greenhouse effect, global warming, CO2 levels going through the roof. I mean, if you grow cannabis as a fuel, you know, it takes in CO2 while it's growing. It gives off fresh air. And at the end of the cycle, after you remove the seeds or the medicine, you know, what's left, you turn that into a fuel, and it just gives off the same amount of CO2 that it took in while it was growing. No rise in the CO2 levels. It's all being caused because we're burning all these fossil fuels. You know, it's as plain as the nose in your face. But, you know, all the big money interests, they don't want to see us, you know, they don't want to see us have the right to grow this ourselves. But it's like I said, it's not just about food, about medicine. You know, we can create our own food supply. We can create our own energy. And basically everything in our lives can be produced from durable, long-lasting hemp. You know, our homes, everything.
Even our animal feed, you know. I remember having seeing an article, I think it was an Uncensored magazine, about a couple who had gotten one of the very, very highly prized hemp-growing licenses here in New Zealand. I believe they were in Napier. And I think close to 90% of their crop got eaten by birds and animals and stuff because the, you know, we're not the only creatures that love this stuff, bro.
No, that's a fact. You know, between the deer and the rabbits and everything else, I mean, you know, and as you said, you know, this was an animal feed for thousands of years. You know, they used to press the hemp seed oil out of the seeds, and then they used to feed the animals the seed cake. You know, and what I find strange today, you know, you put up things on Facebook about people being cured or, you know, that type of thing, but you'll get more attention if you cure a dog. And we've treated a great number of dogs with this oil now. And, I mean, see, like an animal like a dog, their metabolism is so much quicker than a human's. And, you know, you can basically almost watch the animal heal. You know, I've seen dogs healed of terminal cancer in 2 weeks. So it's just phenomenal what this can do. And I think it would be a wonderful thing. You know, it gives farmers, you know, a viable crop to grow. You know, again, this is what they need. You know,
that's another thing. You can grow the crop, you can make beds for your animals with it, you can feed it to them, and if the animals get sick, you can cure them.
Right.
And you can make all the fuel for all of your farm machines and your house. Uh-huh. You see where
That's
we're going
exactly
here?
Right.
Completely off the grid, independent. Do you wonder why a bunch of ruthless criminal sociopaths who are control freaks with more money and power than God don't want this thing available?
Yeah, it's pretty obvious, isn't it? My God. But you know,
I mean, I'm just taking I may be wrong, I'm just taking a stab in the dark here.
Well, it's just that people are caught up in this twisted illusion, you know, that the richest and most powerful among us, you know, they're the ones that have created this. But it's not real. It's an illusion. And it's an illusion designed just for profits. That's all it is. And when you live in a world where human life is not as important as profits, then you're, you know, I mean, you have to admit there's something badly wrong with the system.
Whoa.
But it's an easy thing to correct. I mean, like I said, all we have to do is unite and get cannabis growing everywhere, just like Jack Harris said. You know, use it in every conceivable way. Let's save the planet. Let's save ourselves. And we can do this.
Now, I thought about like a very low-tech kind of an experiment, you know, like the Swiss family cannabinoid or something like that. You know, you send a guy out, with a knife and a couple of garden tools and whatnot, just into a little empty plot of land. And what his job is to do there, with some help and perhaps access to machinery at certain points, is his job is to grow the hemp, process it, build his house, all his stuff and everything, and take care of all his animals and provide all his energy and what have you, and actually literally go out into a field with nothing more than a pocket knife and a couple of hemp seeds and building civilization out of it.
Well, that's the truth. I mean, you could actually do that. There's I've seen a video on YouTube. This shows this beautiful house, you know, with the, you know, nice furniture, doors, everything. And the guy that owns the house, he said, "I grew this house on 3 acres of land. Everything in that house was made from cannabis." So, you know, it's the future is right there. I mean, independence, freedom for us all, you know, and a much healthier and better way of life.
Yeah,
you know,
we're getting into more concentrated in the cities now and everything like that. You're wondering where all the materials are going to come for that extension that you want on your house. Is your wife pissing you off about it or something? Grow a bit of hemp in your backyard, and there's your materials, bro. Okay, there's your house extension. Are you happy now? Thank you very much. Did it cost you anything? No, it didn't.
Well, I'm very happy to see, like, you know, like, well, there's hempcrete is becoming very popular now. And when you look into hempcrete, it makes perfect sense. You know, it's an insulator. It lets the house breathe. This is so important, you know, to any home, you know, to prevent mold and things of that nature. So, you know, to me, it's so many things about this plant that just make so much common sense. But yet the world we live in, or the people that run the world we live in, they seem to lack the common sense completely. You know, it's like I said, it's all about profit margins to them. And that's in reality, you know, these people, I don't look at them really as being much more than psychopaths. You know, it's to them, money and power is like a drug. They need more and more and more. You know, they're addicted to this. And you know, like, how much money and power do you need?
You know, according to the Daily Telegraph, about $60,000 a year can buy happiness. Anything more? No guarantees. Because what it does is it simply removes all the stresses and everything. Oh my God, I've got car bills to pay. I've got energy bills to pay. You on 60 grand a year? Yeah. Well, then you can afford all that, can't you? Yeah. Suddenly the anxiety of life disappears. Now I have to figure out what to do with my life, because all of those external problems are gone, and now I can only retreat inwards and look at myself and see how fucked up I am and what a slave I am to the system. You know, that's a real problem, isn't it?
Well, you know, it breaks my heart, Vinny, because I receive so many emails, and we have to stop with the emails, because there's only two of us that actually answer all of these, and, you know, it's got us so tied up. But, you know, like, there's so many people that contact us, you know, they don't have any money. They're, you know, where can I get the oil? And I can't tell them, because, you know, I have no way of knowing, you know, like, well, I'm in Europe, and, you know, and you start looking at all these different countries. I mean, there are people out there that do supply high quality oils. There's no question. But that's not a guarantee. Like, today they might have high quality oils. Tomorrow they might not. You know, so there's no possible way that I can point people in any direction. And that was never the aim anyway. You know, when we put up the phoenixtears.ca website, it was just about telling people how they could heal themselves. Do it yourself. Take responsibility for your own life. This is what we were trying to do. But, you know, everybody jumped on the bandwagon because they think they can fill their pockets. And until the people stand up, you know, and demand their, you know, their right to freely grow this plant, that's what's going to happen. So, I don't think they can ever stop it now, because it's, you know, it's like I said, You know, the pharmaceutical industry, people can't afford to play these games anymore. They just don't have the money. And I think the vast majority of people now, you know, if they get sick, they're just simply going to grow and ignore the laws and grow the cannabis that they need to heal themselves. And they have every right to do that. You know, I mean, when you look at all the people that have been put in jail over, you know, over cannabis, actually, any judge that ever put anyone in jail over this plant should be put in jail himself, because he's the criminal. It's not the guy growing cannabis, for God's sakes. Cannabis never hurt anyone, but the legal system certainly has.
I wonder exactly how the legal system and all of these things can be reformed in isolation, considering they're all so interconnected. This is why I often am very confused, because it's kind of like a zeppelin, right? It's all tied down with ropes and all these anchors and all over the place so that it won't float away, you know? One country will break away, like Iceland will go, ha-ha, we'll kick out the bankers, and then the bankers just basically demonize them or omit them completely in the media, and then now it turns out that the IMF is back in there and they're paying them back, right? Unless all the ropes are cut at once, humanity mm-hmm. will never be free. Now, well, that... here's a question. If you... I and, let's say, a million other people standing in the edge of this giant circle in the desert. And then in the middle of that circle, there's somebody who's responsible for all the scumbaggery, right? If we all start heading towards that one direction, not only can he not escape, but victory is inevitable. And not only that, but only a limited amount of us will actually be able to reach that person, because that's a million people going after one, right? And it comes to the point where you have to realize that you play a part in a greater scheme. You have to realize that, I call it the tactic of the cactus, right? A cactus protects mm-hmm. itself on all sides by covering itself in spines. So if anybody tries to step on it from any direction, doesn't matter whether you're coming at it from low or high or on the side or on top, you're going to get a prick to remind you. And I think humanity has reacted more or less the same way, sort of like an immune system, where for each instance of scumbaggery, for each town, for each city, for each state, each country, there's somebody for whom that particular element of scumbaggery, whatever it may be, is their issue. You know, they're very, very passionate about it. And they are the ones that are acting as a spine in that one little place, so that the boots of the scumbaggery cannot be treading on us without a little prick mm-hmm. reminding them that they're not allowed to do that.
Well, we're the ones that should be giving them that little prick to remind them, and we should be doing it rapidly. You know,
as we're not compensating for something.
No, but I mean, when you see all of these police forces and the way they behave towards this issue, I mean, it's totally ridiculous. You know, and I treated a good number of police officers myself, and believe me, they eat their words when they're sick or one of their loved ones are sick and they need the oil. Then they're singing a whole different tune. But, I mean, you know, like I said, the police have families, too. They have loved ones suffering and dying that this medicine could heal. And yet they're out there arresting everyone, you know, for growing cannabis. This is just beyond foolish, you know. But that's the system we've created. Actually, we didn't create it. The rich elite did, but we've gone along with it. So I look at, you know, this whole issue is we're all really at fault. You know, I mean, we know that there's corruption all around us. I mean, we're perfectly aware of that fact. And corruption is a crime against us all. But yet none of us are uniting to do anything about it. We have to get rid of the corruption. And then we could have a decent, you know, world to live in. But as long as we're going to allow this to go on and let all these big money people have their way and do whatever they like, then we don't really have much of a future.
Now, this is another thing. As a young man, the future is kind of like a long way off for me, right? You know how the older you get, the faster time happens, and the less there is ahead of you. You've put so much far behind you now that it's a lot quicker, right? How do you reconcile that? Because I don't know. I was driving down the road this one day and I thought, what the hell is the purpose to my life? What do I actually want to achieve after I'm dead? You know, nothing that I can achieve now, but something I can achieve after I'm dead. And I thought it was like, you know, what would be cool is if somebody got up and spoke at my funeral or something like that. And they're a person who's responsible for saving millions of lives. And they'll say something along the lines of, when I was in my darkest day, when I was in my worst time in my life, when I just was about to give up on doing the right thing, there was this guy, Vinnie Eastwood, who came into my life, who showed me the lighter side of genocide, realized that I could actually have a laugh about all these really serious topics in order to survive the corrupting influence that it had on me. Right? That was kind of what I wanted to achieve. And then the very next day, I think a guy named Kevin Galilee, who's written like 5-6 books on depopulation, has gone on countless hunger strikes against the UN depopulation agenda and things like that, actually posted almost word for word what I wanted. And I'd never even talked to him or anybody else about it. And then I got hit by this really perplexing question. If you've already accomplished in life what you wanted to accomplish after your death, what is the purpose of your life now?
Well, I've wondered, and I know in my case, like, well, I just look at the first 50 years of my life as being nothing much more than a waste of time, you know. But when I stumbled into the truth, you know, about the healing powers of this plant, it gave me a purpose in life. And, you know, I realized back in 2003, 2004, when I was witnessing all of these amazing healing effects, you know, I mean, how could I sit there, you know, as a human being and watch my friends and neighbors, you know, suffer and die, when I know, you know, I know a way that they can heal themselves? I mean, how could anyone do that? You know, so I just feel that I did the right thing, and I believe that when the day comes when I finally leave this life, that I won't have too much to hang my head about. But I'm not out here seeking credit or anything. I don't give a damn if they give the credit for all of this to Mickey Mouse. But you know, it's just that, you know, this is desperately needed, and I'm not looking to say that I found the cure for any disease. I'm just trying to get the medicinal use of these extracts into mainstream use as quickly as possible, because people are suffering and dying everywhere, and they're just dying, you know, over greed. Their lives are being sacrificed at the altar of greed. That's what's happening right now, and that has to come to an end.
I don't believe that if you do good things, that good things will necessarily happen to you. In fact, I kind of believe the opposite, that if you do the right thing, you'll get shit on your entire life and everything becomes a massive struggle. Whereas if those people who seem to act really evil and steal and lie all the time, they get huge amounts of monetary and powerful rewards out of it, don't they?
Oh, yes, they do. And I mean, this is what shocked me, because, you know, this is so easy to prove, and I've been doing this so long, I always thought that, you know, a philanthropist or some foundation or something of that nature would step in behind me and, you know, get this show on the road. But nobody ever has. You know, it seems to, like, you know, especially the mega rich, I mean, all they're interested in is making more money. It's not about what's good for the world or good for the public. It's what's good for them. And this is what's been going on now for, you know, so long. And this is the reason we, you know, we live in this horrible environment that we're, you know, currently existing in.
Mm-hmm. This environment is, it's becoming increasingly toxic. And this is another thing that I've been dealing with a little bit lately, is this sort of infighting among people who are traumatized, right? Now, a lot of the people who've devoted themselves to the exposure of scumbaggery in some particular area have often had something bad happen to them. The problem is that this actually it damages you to a degree, and it means that you have a propensity to project pain onto others when they attack you, right? If you feel pain, you project it back onto them. I saw this interesting post this morning that you've got to respond the opposite way. Like, if somebody's like in pain and they're getting really aggressive or something like that, sometimes if you respond with sympathy, they get totally disarmed and they change the mood. They shift back, and it's really love that's going to bring us back from this sort of dark bridge of humanity. Not fighting in anger quite so much. However, psychopaths prey on the tolerances of society. They tell you all these sob stories so that they will suck you in, right, and take everything that you've got. And that's a microcosm for all politics at the moment.
Well, I mean, I'm not telling the public what they must take as a medicine, but as human beings, we all have the right to determine what we use, you know, to heal ourselves. And, you know, if people want to go take chemotherapy and radiation, if they're stupid enough to take these absurd treatments, well, that's up to them. But who has the right to tell me that I cannot use the extracts from this amazing plant to heal myself? You know, as a human being, we have that natural right. We've always had it until just the last few decades when it was taken away from us. You know, so it just boggles the mind that, you know, that, you know, that humanity could have sunk to this level. But, you know, it's like I said, you know, just if we want to use cannabis as a medicine, who should have the right to tell us that we can't? And no one has that right. It's that simple. But as long as, you know, as long as we sit in on our Chesterfields and we, you know, we don't unite, we don't do anything about this, they're going to keep shoving this nonsense down our throat. And believe me, that doesn't leave humanity with much of a future.
Now, people don't have a choice, really, to react there. This is something I've had to reiterate on the show a couple of times. Have you got some kind of comfort that you enjoy right now in your life? It won't be there one day. You got some kind of joy you've experienced. It won't be there one day. You got some kind of thing that you're looking at growing and making better. You're looking at getting away from it all. You're looking at being independent. That won't be available to you as an option at some point. And it's only through giving up those things that you love, those things that you're escaping to, and those things that you believe in, you know, to a large degree. Just, you know, the belief of, oh, I can just sit back and watch the world pass me by and I'll just focus on my own stuff and everything will be hunky-dory. Unfortunately, we have to abandon certain beliefs regularly because they're simply not true. And they give us a comfortable excuse by which we can continue to live a comfortable life, but you don't learn anything very clearly and easily out of comfort. You learn it through pain. You learn it through suffering. That's usually what motivates you, your desire, your natural inbuilt desire to protect yourself is what needs to be activated before you will actually commit yourself to any kind of heroic endeavor.
Well, I know for a fact that, you know, I mean, I wouldn't be sitting here today if it wasn't for the extracts, you know, from that healing, wonderful healing plant. You know, the road I was on, you know, if I had stayed on the chemicals and things that the medical system was providing, I would have been dead in a very short time, or I would have just committed suicide because it's very hard to live with the condition that I have. You know, the oil makes it so I can live with it. I still have the ringing noise, but when I take the oil or take the extracts, it, you know, it, the noise is still there, but it doesn't take over your life. You know, this is the problem with an injury like I have, like post-concussion syndrome. You know, the noise that in my head, it just takes over my damn life, and it just makes your whole life just miserable. But if I have the extracts, I can deal with it, and I can live a good quality of life. And this is what I've been doing, although many times I've gone for extensive periods now, like for 2 months and more, sometimes without the medicine, because I simply don't have the money to buy it myself. You know, I can't grow it because I'm traveling from country to country and I can't stay long enough to actually produce a crop. So quite often I have to go without too. But, you know, I just want to get this medicine perfected to its highest level, you know, in the shortest time period possible. And I think that I'm not a doctor. I don't even know if you could call me a researcher, but I do know a great deal about producing these extracts, and I already know how to bring them up to much higher healing levels. I know how to produce the extracts, you know, with no solvents or anything of that nature at all. Although, you know, there's been a lot of flack about this, you know, solvent residue in the oil. Well, I've been eating this oil myself now since 2001. I supplied it to thousands and thousands of people. Nobody had any complaints. So I don't think that the oil itself is so anti-poisonous, even if there was a small amount of solvent residue left in the oil, it would neutralize any harmful effects because of the anti-poisonous effects. But, you know, it's all so simple. If people would just take the time to research this a little bit, you know, go to my website, look at the information, and does the public actually think that I could travel around for, you know, to all of these different countries and do all of these big seminars with some of the top experts in the world? And, you know, I mean, if anything I was saying was not the truth, they would have defrocked me years ago. The thing is they can't defrock me because I'm telling the truth. And that's the reason, like, the, you know, no doctor will get up on that stage and take me on. They won't even think about it because I can defrock them in 30 seconds because that's all you have to do is ask them why they're not following their own Hippocratic Oath. But, you know, today it horrifies me because my name is being used by everyone, you know, that's producing the oil now, it seems. You know, they're all supplying the Rick Simpson oil. And I get complaints every day from people, you know, I bought your oil. Well, it's not my oil that you're buying. You're just taking somebody's word for it. You know, I'm not connected with these people. But yet, you know, like, they're looking, you know, for get their money back, or they're looking for some avenue that they can use to do something about this. But there's really nothing much I can do to help them. You know, that's the reason I've always stressed, you know, if you want the real oil, the only way to know that you have the real thing is to produce it yourself. And then, you know, when you go to a drug dealer somewhere or a dispensary, you have no idea what you're buying. You know, it may not have any medical values at all, and I've seen this in many cases. You know, it's just astounding that so many people, you know, that just don't care. You know, all they want is to reach in your pocket and get as much money out of it before you die as possible. It's insane that that there's so many evil people on this planet. But believe me, it shocked me that there was such vast numbers. That are getting involved in this. And what I see in the States right now, it's just like I said, it's everybody's out there trying to fill their pockets. You know, the Stanley brothers in the U.S. with this Charlotte's Web and all this hype about CBD. I mean, I have nothing against CBD. I have nothing against any cannabinoid. But when you put so much emphasis, you know, on CBD, it's misleading the public. You know, a lot of people are running out and getting CBD oils to treat their cancer, and it's not working. Well, you need, because it doesn't have the synergetic effect it needs. Like, you know, like these extracts, there's over 100 different cannabinoids. They don't even know how many cannabinoids there actually are. The last count was 108 is the number I heard. So, I mean, we have a great deal to learn about this plant yet, but, you know, if we have the freedom to do the proper research, you know, we could bring this up to a much higher healing levels in a very short time. And I think it's a horror story. When I look at all these con artists out there, you know, there's even foundations out there, the Rick Simpson Foundation. Well, I have nothing to do with this, you know. But if the internet, see, there's no policing on the internet. That's a problem too. But, you know, our governments, if our governments were doing their job and their police forces were doing their job, they'd be going after these scam artists. But see, they don't want that. They want these people to supply these low-quality oils. They want to discredit the use of these extracts. That's what they're out to try to do. And that's the reason the government is not reacting. You know, it's truly horrifying, Vinny.
It's the horror, I think, that is the motivator, right? I think usually people don't really react to a situation if they just hear about how bad it is. They need to see it. Right, I remember there was a study conducted in Berkeley, I believe, that said that people who were born with unfair privileges above other people and things like that, they tend to look down on them, they tend to boss people around, they tend to be disrespectful. Basically, they become a wanker, you know, in the New Zealand nomenclature. However, they also conducted a study where they exposed those wankers to real human suffering and real poverty right there in front of them, and they determined that although there is a propensity through wealth and indifference and things of like that to act really kind of cold and inhuman, they found that a lot of the subjects reversed their behaviors and actually acted like different people even after the study was over. So it is possible that there's a large section of society who aren't psychopaths, but they're currently in the service of them, or they're currently acting like them on the surface. And it is that kind of psychopathic mindset that is our true enemy, I think, because it is the enemy of progress. It's the enemy of everything that makes us human, and all other problems are rescinded from that. It's, scumbaggery, essentially. That's the reason why I coined the term, is because I had to figure out what's the common thread here, what's causing absolutely all the problems. And it's scumbaggery. All right. The motives, notions, and portents of a scumbag.
Well, you're quite right about that, brother. We're putting up a great deal more information up on my website. I had to rewrite the whole site because other people were putting it up there and they were changing the words around and things like that. But this time we're getting it together right. And there's a great deal more information there now for people, you know, my opinions about different solvents and decarboxylation and all of these other important, you know, things connected, you know, with this. So, you know, if people will just go to the phoenixtears.ca website, I think that they'll find all the information they could possibly need, you know, so they can produce these extracts themselves, and it'll answer most of their questions. I have my books available, too, at the phoenixtears.ca website. There's, you know, Rick's Phoenix Tears, The Rick Simpson Story, and then Phoenix Tears, Rick Simpson Oil, Nature's Answer for Cancer. And they're both available as ebooks. And actually, my first book, Phoenix Tears, The Rick Simpson Story, that's now in print, and that's available on the website, too. But the ebooks in particular, I mean, I don't know, countless people now have just taken my ebooks and put them up, you know, on their websites and things like that for free, you know, and this robs me of the funding I need, you know, to carry on the crusade and to, you know, and to further this research. So please be aware of the fact that, you know, that if you see my books available elsewhere, they're not being made available legally. You know, there are copyright laws, and I do hold the copyright on these books. And I mean, in a way, I'm glad to see the information being spread. But if I don't have enough money, you know, to carry me on, you know, to carry on with what I'm doing, then, you know, like if the well goes dry, then what can I do? You know, so I'm getting by right now, but that's about all I'm doing. And, of course, that's a common complaint, I think, with all activists. None of us ever have any money. But, you know, like anything I've ever made from book sales or anything of that nature, it's gone right back into this cause. You know, I'm living like a church mouse. I'm not, you know, driving around in a damn Cadillac, and I'm not the head of some big organization that supplies oil worldwide. You know, I'm just an ordinary man, and I'm just a man who wants to see the right thing done here. And this is, you know, the reason I've been fighting for this cause.
Yeah, I think that's also another indicator of who you can tell doesn't have an agenda, you know. Are they broke as a motherfucker, you know? You know, because they got nothing to gain from what they're doing. And it's as soon as huge amounts of financing start to get involved in things, that's when I think almost like the purity gets sucked out of it. Like money has that kind of corrupting thing on people, even with people's inheritances and things of that nature, you know, they can like split the family apart. Sometimes money is just really an evil thing. And it'd be so great if we had a money-free society where everything that was there is there on tap whenever you need it. And you just give it back when you're finished with it. No need for any exchanges of monetary value. No need for a super rich. No need for a super poor. Only a need for a super lovely and happy human race.
Well, boy, wouldn't that be refreshing for a change.
I need to make a sci-fi movie like that, but the problem is if you make a sci-fi movie about everybody getting along, there's nothing to fucking watch on the movie screen.
Now, I laughed recently here. I've come in contact with a young man in the U.S. named Peter Hanna, and he's put out a book now called Cannabis Paradise. And, you know, he's only young, but he has a good knowledge of this plant, and he's quite the little activist. So I'm very pleased to see people like that, you know, coming out. You know, again, it's just another way of informing the public, and you know, and shows like you're doing here, Vinny, that you know are so important. I mean, what I'm saying is important, but if I didn't have you, you know, to channel this information through, where would I be? You know, so you know, we're all in this damn battle together, and we're all fighting it, you know, as hard as we can. So I think that you know, shows like you're like the one you do, and many others deserve a great deal of credit. You know, they're standing up, they're telling the public the truth, so by all means, please support American Freedom Radio.
And it's a symbiotic relationship as well, because without the activists that are actually out there going and doing something, we'd have nothing to report on, we'd have nobody here to interview, that kind of thing. One cannot exist without the other, and that's something I've learned about organic systems, is that they're all inherently symbiotic. What affects one will affect the other. And the necessity for the role of me and people like me is comes down to this. You know, you ever heard that thing, if a man speaks his mind in a forest and no woman hears him, is he still wrong?
of course he is.
My one is, if you expose some scumbaggery and don't upload the video, did that scumbaggery really get exposed? All right. So all the activists that are going on out there and doing it, doing the work and doing the research and speaking on the podium and everything, that's a huge responsibility. To also craft onto that the responsibility of filming yourself and editing the videos and putting them all up there on top of that skill set is, it's not possible. All right, basically, it's not possible. And the thing is, you need, as a media person, to find all of those people who aren't that good at, you know, getting their big media campaign and stuff all sussed out there. The people who actually do need your help. The people who are on a budget. The people who are self-sacrificing for the good of others, right? That's where you kind of need to focus your media attention on. And the reason I think that the mainstream media has been so corrupted is because there's no money in that approach. If you're helping people who are broke, yeah, how are they going to donate to you? They're not going to, because they can't. All right. And well, if you're talking about and if you're talking about somebody who doesn't have a huge media following and stuff like that, when you talk to them, how many people are actually going to watch that video? Not a whole lot. It's the reason why I talk about the ripple effect, because there's been so many, you know, small time activists who maybe haven't even been on a radio show since, who've actually changed direction in their life for the better just because they've been on this show and had some, and felt like somebody was listening.
That's right. You know, I mean, there's a lot of people out there doing good work. There's a gentleman from Canada named James Corbett. He does a show called the Corbett Report. And if you look at episode 286 of the 286 of the Corbett Report, it's called Rockefeller Medicine. If you watch that, then you'll understand why we have the rotten medical system we have today. And there's also many other documentaries out there, like The Marketing of Madness. That's about 2.5 hours long, but it's doctors actually exposing the medical system for what they're doing. You know, and I think once, if you watch The Marketing of Madness, you'll probably never want to take another pill. You know, this is reality, and this is what these documentaries are bringing us. They're telling us the truth, for God's sakes. But people are just glued to their televisions and their newspapers, and, you know, it's the mainstream media, it seems that that's what most people pay attention to. And we've got to stop that, because the mainstream media have been lying to us, and they've been doing this for a very long time now. Mm. So I don't put any trust in the mainstream media at all to do anything right.
The problem that I have with the mainstream media is the way the alternative media react to them. And I understand that it's probably a necessary job to debunk the mainstream media as it goes on. The problem that I have with that is that the mainstream media omit so many things. So while you're busy reporting and debunking what they've reported on, which was more or less at best a distraction, there are many other things that are happening that are of greater importance that slip through the cracks that you won't get as many clicks for covering. And you have a moral obligation to cover those kind of things, not because there's a great benefit in it for you right now, but because it's the right thing to do and it needs no further justification. Rick Simpson has been my very special guest. Thank you very much. And phoenixtears.ca is the website, and thank you for listening to American Freedom Radio. Donate to them. Donate to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com as well. Now, we are not rich, but we love you anyway. Thank you.